Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
This week, Fred, while the left was distracted over its obsession with Trump and Russia, here at Real Science Radio, we quietly snuck up to the perimeter of one of their encampments and lobbed a truth bomb right into the middle of their Center for Strategic Planning.
So, Bob. Yeah. How in the world did you manage to get a question asked at that prestigious conference?
Oh,
of,
well,
you know, of atheists,
yeah,
basically.
Fred, yeah, it's all the big science groups and leaders from around the world. Fred, it was a little plotting, a little scheming, years of undercover work, and actually God's blessing, I think. It was so cool to get that question asked.
Well, so it's going to be fun to hear the audio from that NASA scientist who answered your question this week about water and abiogenesis. They take the problem and they pretend it's the solution. We get that so often.
That's such a good point. They take what is a problem for their theory and they have such bravado, they make believe that this solves our problems. The problem they claim is the solution. Wow.
Yep. So this really was one of the more prestigious science events of the year. The heavy hitters were there. It was over in Germany.
Right.
And the sponsors and participants included NASA,
yep,
the journal Science,
yeah, yep,
Merck, which is the pharmaceutical giant,
right,
right, and then the American Association for the Advancement of Science.
There were so many more. So what we've done is to postpone our scheduled program on Hawaii's Kilauea volcanic eruption. Until next week.
Until next week. So again, Lord, we're willing, teasing that one more week.
Yes, that's right. You know, they've had more injuries there, sadly.
Oh, yeah.
Again, from flying molten rock. And the number of daily earthquakes has increased to hundreds a day just in the last week. With those magnitude 1.5 and greater, there have been more than 4,000 earthquakes.
Wow.
So,
that's just in that area.
Yeah. So we'll have to get to that next week.
Because I had to clarify that it's just in that area so people don't all of a sudden start thinking it is really the end of the world.
Right. It probably isn't.
It probably isn't.
But if anybody wants to make a wager, I mean, it could be the Lord, his return has
been
imminent.
Oh, I like your strategy here on a wager. If anyone would like to make a wager with Real Science Radio.
Yeah, I'll be happy to.
We'll be more than willing to
take some of that action.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could be. I hope and pray the Lord comes back. Sooner the
better. We can't lose on that wager, so please, let's do it.
That's right. So, Fred, the panel discussion at this conference over in Germany that we managed to insert ourselves into the middle of, that included NASA's senior scientist for astrobiology, Dr. Mary Wojtek.
Well, so that question is right in her field, so it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, about water and biogenesis, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think the audience is going to love to hear how she answered.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not really answered, but how she responded. She never really answered your question.
Yeah, that's a good point. Unfortunately, this panel, the topic was basically where is science headed over the next decade? There was a professor of energy from MIT, and that's where our favorite scientist got his PhD, Dr. Walt Brown.
Too bad he wasn't there.
Yeah, then it would have been awesome.
Yeah.
There was a Stanford University professor of bioengineering, an AI expert with a PhD in neuroscience from University College London. It had a bunch of big shots. A Royal Society professor of chemistry and a Max Planck microbiologist, of course, working over there in Germany, which is where the conference was held. And the moderator of the panel was the news editor for the journal Science. His name is Tim Appenzeller.
He's the one who read your question to the NASA scientist.
Yeah, and so, Fred, I think we should read it ourselves to our own audience, and then we'll hear Tim, the moderator, give it to the astrobiologist.
Yeah, that'll be great.
From NASA. Here it is, and I registered for this event maybe 6 weeks ago. I became a member of the AAAS years ago for reasons
that's
like
key.
This.
Yeah, you were already a member for years.
Right. And so then this event comes up, and I think, Lord, is there any way we could get some truth out on their dime? They had to spend millions of dollars on this conference.
Yeah.
And right smack dab in the middle of the highest profile session, this panel of superstars, here comes this question exposing NASA for misrepresenting the science for decades.
So the question came in from Denver, Colorado, from Bob Inyart of Real Science Radio. Of course, he reports you as what was
said,
an independent
Bob,
radio
an independent science, reporter.
Science reporter.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that was fine.
Yeah.
They weren't about to give people too much publicity. But so here was the question I submitted over the internet. So I was participating in the conference online, as thousands of people around the world did. And so here's my question to Dr. Wojtek. And I waited until she gave her 3-minute opening statement, you know, to be respectful.
Mm-hmm.
And she gives her opening statement. Okay, we know who she is and what she's claiming, that there's life out there in outer space. And she's an astrobiologist. She studies the biology of aliens. It's like being a scientist and you're going to study the geology of Hoth, you know, that planet in Star Wars, or Jurassic World, that
new the latest movie.
Yeah, where they're going to go rescue the dinosaurs. And this one woman says, oh, I'm a paleo veterinarian. And they're like, oh, really? What kind of experience you have? Well, I've never actually I've never actually seen the dinosaur. Anyway, so the question to Dr. Wojtek, rather than an asset, isn't water the enemy of prebiotic molecules? It's the universal solvent, and outside of a living organism, water dissolves life's building blocks, including amino acids, sugars like RNA and DNA, various kinds of carbohydrates and other polymers. Shouldn't this chemical challenge be more openly acknowledged in astrobiology?
So Tim Appenzeller does a good job of presenting this question to her, and we're going to hear the audio.
Yeah, I think he does, and he gets around to explaining the question a little bit.
Yeah, clarifying it.
To Mary. So, okay, let's hear the audio all the way through. It's short. And then, Fred, if we could play it again, and we'll do stop the tape a couple times to discuss it. But at first, let's hear the whole thing.
And I'd like to ask one that is from Bob, an independent science reporter. And the question is, rather than an asset, isn't water the enemy of prebiotic molecules? And outside of a living organism, it dissolves life's building blocks like amino acids, sugars like RNA and DNA, various kinds of carbohydrates and other polymers. Shouldn't this chemical challenge be more openly acknowledged in astrobiology? I guess this assumes it's not acknowledged, but what do you say?
I think it's acknowledged. I'm not exactly, I think that's one of the biggest challenges we have, is understanding the evolution from simple compounds that can be made abiotically towards more organized and more highly functional biomolecules that are important for life. So I guess I don't understand.
And so water is a challenge, how these molecules survive.
Of water? Sorry,
yes.
I guess I didn't get it.
Well, I think the question is, it posits that water is a challenge for, because it attacks the various molecules involved.
So in some of the prebiotic things, this is something that people think about. Hydration and dehydration reactions are really important in prebiotic chemistry. And so postulating that life could evolve when there is no opportunity for an environmental separation to allow dehydration reactions actually is a problem, and people do address that. And so, and whether it's, you know, you need a continent, which some people, you know, life couldn't evolve until we had land so we could get away from the water, or there's other ways to separate it. There can be phase separation with ice and water. There can be a variety of other ways that you can get dehydration reactions. And so I think that is very important and recognized.
Thank you.
Okay, so water is a challenge. Wow. You got to get away from the water. Maybe you need a continent.
Yeah.
So the audience there in this meeting hall, they never heard this, that water is a problem.
Yeah, I bet you they never had.
Right. 1,000 times a year somewhere in the world, there's some atheistic science program, some article, some documentary, TV show, interview, panel discussion, NASA producing a video, Alien Oceans, Mission to Europa, where they say, hey, there's water up there, so that's probably a good place to look for the origin of life. It's probably really easy.
They
you got
do that
water.
Over and over again. We mentioned earlier, they take the problem and they pretend it's the solution.
Yes. So it's good to hear an open acknowledgement. Fred, you and I have been trying for a few years now to get this problem more well known, even among creationist and intelligent design folks, that this is a powerful argument. Whenever they're using a ploy to make one of their most fundamental arguments, and you could expose that, that's really powerful. And so I'm thankful in the last year or so, there have been, I think, two films, maybe one from the intelligent design community, one from the creation community, where they've pointed out that water is a problem for abiogenesis. It's not a help. It's not the solution. It's one of the many lethal problems to trying to get life to arise from inorganic matter.
Well, speaking of intelligent design, one of their most prominent scientists, Stephen Meyer, gave you the big kudos, the big thumbs up.
Thumbs up for getting this question lobbed into the middle of their atheistic Center for Strategic Destabilization.
It was definitely a truth bomb they were not expecting.
Yeah, that's right. So, and you know what's fun? We have a screenshot that I took when Mary Wojtek was answering the question. So we'll post that along with today's show summary at rsr.org/abiogenesis. So that'll be fun. And in their user interface for this event, they put the question that you've submitted right there. So we see her.
You see that.
You see the panel. You see the question. It's all a self-contained package. So let's hear this again. And this time we'll take it in pieces.
And I'd like to ask one that is from Bob, an independent science reporter. And the question is, rather than an asset, isn't water the enemy of prebiotic molecules? And outside of a living organism, it dissolves life's building blocks like amino acids, sugars like RNA and DNA, various kinds of carbohydrates and other polymers. Shouldn't this chemical challenge be more openly acknowledged in astrobiology? I guess this assumes it's not acknowledged, but what do you say?
I think it's acknowledged.
Stop the tape. Stop the tape. Fred, acknowledged where? Only in their inner sanctum.
Yeah,
they don't
only
ever,
maybe among themselves, but
they never
in public. Never.
I've been consuming science materials since I was in grammar school, elementary school, back on the East Coast in New Jersey. Voraciously. I have never heard any kind of public presentation where the atheistic secular scientists say, you know, we want life to evolve out in space and we look for water. But to tell you the truth, water destroys all those molecules. So it's quite a quandary we have.
Yep.
I've never heard it.
I've never heard it either in all the years I've debated and talked about creation versus evolution, either from the science community and even just from their layman, you know, representatives of evolution.
Right, exactly.
You know, all the
on all the
credits,
forums and the Facebook threads and so on. In fact, with today's show summary, let's embed that video I mentioned from NASA, new video, Alien Oceans, NASA's Mission to Europa. In fact, we'll start it right at the point where they say, and there's water on Europa.
Yeah.
Woo. And what a great place to look for life. Mm-hmm. And probably life originated there separately. And if so, look how easy it is for life to start.
Wow. Yep.
Because there's water. So as we go on, Fred, let's talk about what it is that water really does to these different molecules and polymers. Let's talk about that. But first, continuing with Dr. Mary Wojtek.
I'm not exactly, I think that's one of the biggest challenges we have is understanding the evolution from simple compounds that can be made abiotically towards more organized and more highly functional biomolecules that are important for life. So I guess I don't understand.
And so water is a challenge, how these molecules survive.
Stop the tape. I think Tim Appenzeller, who's an editor at the journal Nature, he's their news editor. I think this is something he obviously understood the question immediately.
Very much so.
He didn't read it well. He might be a great editor. He wasn't especially good at reading this question. but he obviously understood it immediately, and now he's stating, so water is a challenge. I thought water, Mary, I thought water was the solution.
Yeah.
It's the problem.
And like you said, all the people that are at that conference, they've never heard this before.
Yeah.
It's such a great truth bomb to throw right in the middle of that thing.
Yeah, so fun, because it's been our goal for a few years now to get this basic physics knowledge out to the general public, including to the scientists, who can be easily as gullible as everyone else.
Yep.
Because of water? Sorry, yes. I guess I didn't get it.
Well, I think the question is, it posits that water is a challenge because it attacks the various molecules involved.
So in some of the prebiotic, this is something that people think about. Hydration and dehydration reactions are really important in prebiotic chemistry. And so postulating that life could evolve when there is no opportunity for an environmental separation to allow dehydration reactions actually is a problem, and people do address that.
Stop the tape. And they know it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
They just never share that with,
exactly,
with their audience, with the public, when they want funding for all this stuff. They never tell Congress, by the way, we're looking for water, but water would prevent the origin of life because it relentlessly dissolves the molecules
that
you need for life to originate. Fred, yesterday in the locker room of one of our sons, three of our youngest sons, two of them play in a beer league. You know, it's 18 or over hockey.
Okay.
But the youngest, Dominic, 17, he works here at Bob and Yurt Live in the studios.
So this was locker room talk.
Locker room talk. Real locker room talk.
Yeah.
Not like that. Donald Trump's.
Yeah.
Which was so despicable.
Yep.
I've played college sports, high school sports, tons of sports. I never heard anything that disgusting.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm not saying it doesn't happen. But there's no excuse for it.
Nope.
And calling it locker room talk is not an excuse. It was utterly despicable. Mm-hmm. Anyway, for my son Dominic, they're talking about this after ice hockey practice. They're talking about, does God exist? And one of Dom's teammates is a Christian. So he lobs Dom a softball, you know. And one of the other players who says he's an atheist says, oh, well, the science proves you don't need God. And another player says, hey, I wouldn't go there if I were you with Dominic. This is going to be a slaughter.
Yeah.
Go ahead, try that.
Yeah.
And so the guy says, well, they proved in the lab, they proved that they made life in the lab. Now he's going back to like over a half, 1952.
Miller. Yep.
Almost 70 years ago, and they didn't make life. They made acid.
They made acid.
They made a couple amino acids, and they had to immediately remove them from their experiment because they would have been destroyed.
Yeah, and they intentionally left out oxygen too, by the way.
Right, which is something else like water could destroy this
stuff. We're going to have a list pretty soon, right, on what kills a biogenesis.
Yeah, that's
the killers
of
biogenesis.
And water is a great example. So when Mary Wojtek is talking about you need hydration, dehydration, you need the cycle, you need to get away from the water. And so the moderator, Tim, he's like, water's a challenge? And then she's picking up on the question.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, so water is the challenge. You got to get away from the water for life to originate. Boy, this is new information.
And this is where continents come into play.
Oh, yeah, right? You need to get away from the water.
And we got an extra continent, too. We covered that on an earlier show. We have eight now.
Zealandia, yeah. Another prediction fulfilled, a creation science prediction, just rsr.org/predictions. All the continental crust below the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, this is stunning. Fred, it's like you're cheating. When you're dealing with others who don't know that God created the earth and the whole universe in the recent past, and when you're dealing even with Christians who don't know that the fountains of the great deep explain the global flood, then it's like you're cheating because you know the answers in advance.
Yep.
And that's the case with Mary Wojtek here. We know the answer. She doesn't. She's groping desperately. But there's nothing there for her to grab
Water's
onto.
Water's been our huge ally. You know, the fountains of the great deep.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And now, you know, water.
And even when God made the heavens and the earth and the waters that covered the earth, the deep, and the Spirit of God moved over the face of the waters, do you know one of the biggest theological errors in the history of the church is to agree with the pagan Greeks that God cannot move.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of that immutability, all the omnis and ems. And God, he's immovable. He cannot move. And the third verse in the whole Bible says God moved over. I mean, if you were God in spirit for eternity past and you create a physical universe and an earth, wouldn't you want to go water skiing? I mean, this is exciting. God's like, look at this place. Look what I just made. And God moved over the face of the waters. And yet we have 1,000 theologians who say God cannot move.
Cannot move.
That's so bizarre.
All started from Greek pagan philosophy.
Yeah, it did. Plato and Aristotle.
Yep.
Okay, so you know what today's show could be called? Dear NASA, thanks for taking our call.
Well, let's call it that.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right, let's do that, and let's continue with Mary's response.
And so, and whether it's, you know, you need a continent, which some people, you know, life couldn't evolve until we had land so we could get away from the water, or there's other ways to separate it. There can be phase separation with ice and water. There can be a variety of other ways that you can get dehydration reactions. And so I think that is very important and recognized.
Thank you.
Okay, so dehydration reactions, in other words, removing the water.
Yep.
So you got to remove the water. Water is a far greater barrier to anything like a biogenesis than it is a help. But Darwin imagined a small warm pond somewhere.
Yep.
And just, you know, poof, life originating. So, Fred, it reminds me of Bill Nye, the science guy. I said this on the show on Tuesday, the day that I submitted this question and it got selected. In his debate with Ken Ham, he brings up sexual reproduction as evidence for evolution. And that is so typical of the atheist because so many leading evolutionists have admitted that sexual reproduction is a mystery, a deep mystery to them because they have no idea how it could arise from any Darwinian mechanism. It contradicts the fundamental aspects of the theory.
It contradicts it, and it's an insurmountable problem. I mean, the complexity involved.
Sexual reproduction.
And why would evolution even want to do it?
And if your genes are selfish genes, the only thing really is they want to reproduce, why would an organism, right off the bat, throw away 50% of all his genes? Just throw them away if really it's your genes trying to reproduce themselves.
Yeah, and I listened to that show, Bob, on Tuesday. Great show. You know,
I
encourage people to go listen to that. It was cutting news. It was right after it happened. But, you know, you made a great point. Is Bill Nye, you know, you wonder, is he lying or is he just not? He just doesn't know because we don't know for sure. But he's presenting sexual reproduction as evidence for evolution. It's just like NASA does with the water.
Yeah, they take the problem and pretend that it's the solution. So Bill Nye, the science guy, is he just lying, or is he not smart enough to know? Is he stupid? Fred, on this show, we've said for years, stupid doesn't make you sin, but sin makes you stupid.
I love that. I asked you if that is a Bobism. That's
a BEL-ism. And in fact, it's on our website, rsr.org/sayings.
Yep.
rsr.org/sayings.
So, Bob, am I allowed to read a Bible verse on this show?
Well, warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those of the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at Bob and Your Live that you would like to censor anyone who would dare quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice. Raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered.
I love it, Bob.
You
know, when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask God, so how many times did Bob say that throughout his life? I bet you that right now we're probably about 5,228.
Yeah, we used to do that all the time, right, on the show.
Oh, yeah, the TV show was great.
On the air, five days a week for 27 years, like 5,000 shows. But okay, so what do we got?
So this is Ecclesiastes 10, verse 2 through, looks like, verse 3. The heart of the wise inclines to the right, but the heart of the fool to the left. Interesting. Even as the fools walk along the road, they lack sense and show everyone how stupid they are.
How stupid they are.
Yeah.
That reminds
the ones
me
who go
of
to the left.
Proverbs 12, what is it, 12:1, that he who hates correction is stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, you're not supposed to say stupid, Fred. Didn't your mother ever teach you anything? Unless you're quoting the Bible.
Yeah. So I got to repeat it again. The great Bobism, stupid doesn't make you sin, but sin makes you stupid.
Yeah.
And Bill Nye doing the whole debate. But that one, it kind of aggravates you in a sense. He's using a powerful evidence against evolution and tries to sell it as evidence.
As evidence for evolution. And just like NASA, water is the problem. They try to pretend that it's the solution.
And you know there's a lot of atheists watching that debate. They were nodding their heads. Oh, yeah. Good one.
Good one, Bill Nye.
Mr. Science Guy.
You're slaughtering Ken Ham.
Yeah.
So on our website, on our Big Bang article, we have had, and Fred, that continues to do well. When people Google Big Bang predictions, number one out of like a million other pages, and evidence against the Big Bang ranked very highly, right near the top. So on that article, we deal with the biogenesis. And the subtitle there is, Dear NASA, Water is the Enemy of a Biogenesis.
Well, and Bob, I got to bring this up. So in preparing for the show, I did a quick search for water kills a biogenesis. Your question was like fifth in the Google search.
Really?
Yes,
wow.
It was awesome.
I am excited to hear that. So NASA does this ubiquitous bait and switch. Wherever water is found, they claim, and Fred, we'll link to their claims. We'll link to them on their websites, claiming that that's a good place to search for evidence that life may have originated there. Not just that life might be there, because we all know that water is needed to maintain life. But as the universal solvent outside of the controlled environment of a living, organism, water relentlessly dissolves the chemical building blocks of life.
Yeah, like amino acids, sugars, including RNA and DNA, you know, as well as all kinds of carbohydrates and countless other polymers. You know, water, it's the number one liquid that's the number one solvent, and it dissolves everything.
In other words, nothing else, no other liquid dissolves things as well as water. And
so,
it dissolves many things, right?
It does.
So many.
Like
not everything,
salt. Sodium chloride versus water. Who wins, Bob?
Water.
Yeah. And it's you can do this experiment at home.
And it's because of the chemical electrical properties.
Yeah, H2O.
And even the quantum mechanical properties of the water molecule, which that was only discovered like maybe 4 years ago. The water molecule is this wildly sophisticated manufactured item.
Yeah.
It's like every proton, every electron, Fred, is identical. Every proton and electron, they have an identical electrical charge, only they're opposites. Every neutron, they're all identical. They're like manufactured items. And water, one of its many, many roles is to act as a solvent. And sure enough, it dissolves all this stuff. And otherwise, our blood vessels couldn't carry all these molecules throughout our body because our capillaries and all are so tiny. But water dissolves everything, puts it in the blood, sends it all over your body.
Yeah, very much a manufactured item, and we all know who the manufacturer is.
Yeah, God, he really came up with a great recipe.
He's a pretty good engineer.
When he did that water stuff.
He'd be great, you know, as a mentor. You know, an engineer, you want to have a good mentor.
Right, right. Your son Ryan is an up-and-coming engineer.
Yeah, he's an intern where I work. It's awesome to have him there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's been
software
great.
Software engineer?
Yeah, software engineer.
Just chip off the old Fred.
Okay. So the journal Science stated that
the
water,
same journal.
Yeah, that they were there.
Where
were
the moderator the is an editor.
He's
not
the
journal. He's the news editor of Science. So what
and
did
you
the
know
journal
there's plenty
Science?
Of science people from that journal there from Science were at that conference. The journal Science stated that, quote, water is lethal to the survival of DNA.
It's lethal.
Lethal.
And the same goes for RNA. Even Stanley Miller. Back in the 1952.
Yeah, the Miller-Urey infamy.
Yeah, like we mentioned, Stanley Miller wrote in PNAS, you know, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, this is a quote, sugars are known to be unstable in strong acid or base, and further, ribose and other sugars have surprisingly short half-lives for decomposition at neutral pH, making it very unlikely that sugars were available as prebiotic reagents.
Amazing.
So then you got monosaccharides and disaccharides. They dissolve rapidly. And Fred, we put this list together. You and I, our crew at Real Science Radio, we went into the literature to see which of the organic molecules, compounds, which dissolve readily with water.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've been covering soft tissue for a long time, and you've done a really great job with, and you've got a website of all the papers through the years that have documented original biological material.
Soft tissue. Yeah.
Yeah. There's one that's back in 1955, the first known investigation into original biological material remaining in fossils. It was, it was conducted by
That's on our list. Yeah.
The Carnegie Institute. And they stated, quote, "Ultimately, in the presence of water, these peptide bonds are broken."
Yeah, they're broke. Peptides, that's where two or more amino acids are linked in a chain. That's how you make proteins. Water dissolves all the stuff that's essential for life.
You have to have life already there, and then water becomes a benefit.
Right, right. The life, living organisms channel the water and use the water efficiently. Whereas if the same kinds of molecules are not alive, then water wipes it out. So these peptides we're talking about, they're foundational compounds of all living organisms. They're significant throughout every cell, and they're vital in most biological processes. You know, peptides, Fred, they comprise all proteins, all enzymes, various hormones, including unicellular ones. They transport nutrients, they're cellular building blocks.
And water dissolves them.
Dissolves them all. You know, enzymes, they perform and they vastly speed up chemical reactions that are necessary for life. Yet water destroys both kinds of enzymes, the peptide and the non-peptide ribosome enzymes.
Which are made by RNA.
Yes. In fact, you know what? I had to contact a professor of biochemistry in New Zealand, because this matter, to produce this list of everything that is, dissolves in water, the secular scientific community, they don't want to produce this list because it makes their side look really bad. Like they have no answer for how life originated, and their only solution is an enormous problem. And they don't want people to know that. So I contacted this guy who's an expert, and my question was, could you talk to me about non-peptide ribosome enzymes? I want to understand them and how they relate to peptide enzymes. So when we're assembling this list, we know what we're talking about. And, you know, he was wonderfully gracious with his time. I've got our correspondence documented. So, Fred, NASA, the BBC, the European Space Agency, NOVA, we'll link to all these in our show summary. Science educators like Bill Nye and Neil Smoking DeGrasse Tyson, all of them, they ubiquitously use this bait and switch to manipulate their audiences.
Yeah, ubiquitously. Good way to put it. They're doing it all the time. Whereas, again, molecules like DNA and RNA, they easily dissolve in water.
Yeah, including, and the different ways they dissolve are by deamination and depurination. Now, we'll link to that so that those who are especially interested, they could find out in physics, the chemistry of it, what is the water doing to those chemical compounds? So materialist, atheist, they exploit the gullibility and the ignorance that is in their audience, since, you know, people know that water sustains life. And so then they pretend that it's an unquestioned asset for abiogenesis, to form life from the very chemical compounds that water would actually disassemble.
Yeah, and they do it all the time. But, you know, of course, we've talked about information a lot of times. Life is information-based, even more so than it is carbon-based.
Whoa.
So abiogenesis is impossible anyway. Where do you get the information?
Yeah, think about that. Life is information-based. And we say it's carbon-based. The carbon just happens to be an incredibly handy medium, but it's really the information that goes into the next generation of proteins, of organisms, and so on. So, Fred, earlier you mentioned we were talking about this. In fact, one of our listeners in Texas proposed we do another list, and so we're thinking about it, and it could be RSR's DOA list. You know DOA?
Yeah, dead on arrival.
Yeah, RSR's DOA list of lethal abiogenesis killers or something like that. So probably we could generate a list like that of things that are necessary to maintain life, but that they would be fatal for the natural origin of life. Like, for example, we're talking about water, sunlight. I think even maybe symbolism, like a code, a genetic code.
Yep.
There are probably other things. You mentioned oxygen earlier that we could put on our DOA abiogenesis list.
Yeah. So, you know, of course, we've just covered water. But what about sunlight? I mean, it's non-directed energy. It's going to increase entropy. Entropy is never a friend of...
Entropy is when things run down.
Yes.
Right? Entropy always increases in a closed system. And you could consider the entire universe as a closed system.
Yeah.
And so what are you saying, Fred? When sunlight hits the earth, you're saying it's going to...
It provides an energy. So they'll try to say, well, okay, you have pockets of low entropy areas.
Where entropy is reversing.
Yeah. But in order for that to happen, the sunlight has to be... You have to harness it.
It has to be directed. It has to be channeled. You have to apply functional information in order to attempt to offset entropy. But if you just have incoming sun, what happens on the beach if you have some organic compounds laying on the beach and leave them there in the sun for 8 hours or a few days?
They stink really bad or they're gone.
They're stinking, they're gone. Right. It disassembles them. The sunlight, that energy, does the same thing that water does, only in a very different ways.
Yep.
So
in a way, this is I've heard evolutionists use low entropy states as arguments for evolution. And they're doing the same thing. They're taking the problem and acting like it's the solution.
Yeah. In fact,
they don't tell you about it. It has to be directed and harnessed.
In fact, how does the Big Bang produce an entire universe at such a low entropy state?
Yeah.
How does that happen? Yeah. They can't even answer that question. So things tend to go from order to disorder, from available energy to less energy. And if you want to get chains of organic molecules to form randomly, and then you want it to happen in water, the water will dissolve it. You want it to happen up on land on a continent, then the sun will destroy them. So all the factors that they need to pull together to try to originate life naturalistically, they all destroy the life. Just like Miller and Urey figured out in their test tube, well, in their laboratory 70 years ago almost.
Yeah. They're like, well, let's pick the things that won't dissolve, you know. And so they created these acids that were just acids. They were racemized.
They created acid in the lab. And still to this day, the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, they say, did we create life? And that's one of their exhibits. Was life created in the lab? It's been 70 years. You guys don't know yet if you created life. I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? And they look at a little tiny baby in the womb, and they say, that's not life.
Yeah.
And they look at a few acid molecules, and they say, that's life.
Yep.
We created life, but the baby sucking his thumb and playing with his toes and sleeping and dreaming in his mother's womb, they say, that's not life.
Yeah. Reread Ecclesiastes 2 and 3. So then there's symbolic logic. You need to store information. And information, storing information, trust me, Bob, it's not real easy to do. We got like 80-some-odd engineers working on storing information.
You do this for a living.
Yeah. And you know, Ryan will tell you this too. I mean, now that he's working with me at Micron, there's a lot of complexity with storing information.
Yeah, and not only complexity, Fred, not only complexity, but there's symbolic logic.
Yes, information that's being stored.
Information, so... If you need to store information to be retrieved later, let's say to build the next generation of organism, or let's say to build the next proteins to copy the pattern of the ones you already have, well, then you've got to encode the information, the instructions for how to build the protein or the single cell or the organism. It's like encoding information onto a DVD. And then you have to decode that information to build your protein or your offspring. But to encode and decode requires symbolic logic.
That's right. And of course, there's a problem there, Bob. And I'd say it's a fatal problem because the laws of chemistry and physics, they have no symbolic logic functions.
They just don't. Isn't that something? There's no way even to think about the problem. Fred, atheist, they cannot even think about the problem of how to encode the instructions for building a protein into a DNA chain. They can't even think about the problem. We've had some scientists on the show over the years, and they say they've never proposed a workable solution. And I say, wait, stop. Can I object? Objection, Your Honor. They've never proposed any solution. I'd like That's to challenge right. you, Mr. PhD scientist, because you're being too gracious to them. They have three DNA letters code for a single amino acid, one out of possible 20.
20, yeah.
And the next three letters in the DNA molecule code for, they symbolize another amino acid, and so on. So we provided over at Oxford our Dawkins 3-to-1 evolution challenge. We printed up a beautiful hard glossy of it and put it in Richard Dawkins' faculty inbox at New College. This is like the day before he's starting a new semester of classes. We get it in his inbox, and it says, Richard, with everything you've learned in your whole career about Darwinian evolution, how could a process arise where three genetic letters could symbolize a single amino acid? Just that. Forget about all the rest of it. Just that. How could that arise naturally?
Well, yeah, and I'm sure he got really mad when he saw it, because remember how he got angry when he was interviewed and he got caught off guard. He was asked, you know, can you provide one example of the increase of information at the genetic level?
Yeah.
And then there was this pure silence from him.
That was one of the most awkward moments in video history. That really was. So there is no way to think about it because physics and chemistry are not good candidates for coming up with symbolic logic. They just can't do it. Symbolic logic is not physical. It's not made of matter, atoms.
Doesn't weigh anything.
You could translate it. You could ship it at the speed of light. You could transmit it at the speed of light, which is evidence that it's not physical. Because it's not a photon. It's something else. Photons could go at the speed of light. Nothing else could go at the speed of light. Nothing physical. But yet information could travel at the speed of light. That's just one demonstration of many that information is not physical.
Yeah. So what about oxygen, Bob? We mentioned it earlier. The Miller-Urey experiment, they conveniently left oxygen out of the equation.
Yeah. If you have oxygen, you're going to oxidize these prebiotic molecules, and that will destroy them. Everything burns them. Everything disassembles them. Everything takes them apart. And not only that, Fred, time is a problem, too. We should add time to the list.
Oh, good one, yeah.
Because time, when you have an organism, it uses time as a resource to collect incoming nutrients, process them, expel waste, reproduce. It uses time. But when you are trying to originate life from non-life, these molecular compounds are microscopic, and everything happens within milliseconds. You need everything needed to get you going right there in the same milliseconds. It's all got to be there. Even time is the enemy of this. But oxygen, yeah, I think it's a good point, Fred. Of course, they imagine an early atmosphere that's low, minimal oxygen, and they imagine that it's the anaerobic bacteria that originated first.
And remember, to get away from oxygen, they wanted it to be somewhere deep in the ocean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And now we know that that wouldn't work, right? And so then let half a billion years go by or more, and voila, photosynthesis just happens. Never mind that we've recently learned that photosynthesis, again, just like the water molecule, it uses quantum properties. Yeah. It's so wildly complex, and yet evolution, which is undirected, has to blindly make all these mistakes that end up becoming photosynthesis, like the solar cells on your roof.
Unbelievable.
Right. It's a myth for adults.
Ecclesiastes 2, verse 2, 3.
Says,
when you go to the left, you're stupid. So that's a paraphrase.
You know,
but it's accurate.
A myth for adults.
Yeah. Evolution, a fairy tale for grown-ups.
That should be the name of a forum.
Yeah, a website.
What, isn't there one like that?
There is.
What is it
going
called?
On since, I think, 1998?
EvolutionFairyTale.com.
Yep.
That's your website.
That is.
Your evolution forum.
Yep.
I love it, Fred. All right, so that's it. Dear NASA, thanks for taking our call. And from now on,
and take more of them.
We're going to keep tabs on you guys. We don't want you to ever say that if there's water, life is likely to arise without telling the audience, actually, water's one of the biggest problems we got.
That's right. You need to acknowledge that.
And yes.
Stop saying that you have acknowledged it when you never do.
Yeah. Don't lie. Hey, but if there's no God, what's the difference?
Yeah, don't lie. Tell the truth. Do right. And risk the consequences.
All right, guys. This is Bob Enyart and Fred Williams for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.